KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment. When I met my guest, Lena Waithe, about a year ago, I said to her, you have an open invitation to come to my dumb little radio show whenever you want to. She conceded, now that she's an Emmy nominee for her writing and starring in the Thanksgiving episode, as well as the rest of the shows of Master of None, one of the most stylish people I know, Lena Waithe. First of all, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, man.
And one of the things I've said to you and I've said to the group, and the thing that fascinates me about the show, and we've talked about this, but I want to chop it up a little bit here. Mm-hmm. It's a show that's kind of about what it's like to realize that people are always paying attention to you in a way, that they're always looking at you and judging you as a person of color, which I think makes this show unique, doesn't it?
Yeah. I think, you know, Aziz and Alan, you know, came into it with, you know, a vision of wanting to tell their story, but not wanting to do it from a soapbox. You know, I think they sort of like, they're like, look, we're like everybody else. We're regular Joes. We date. We have dreams. We have families. And them just sort of diving into their unique family dynamic because they're first generation kids and what that's like. I just think it was sort of a breath of fresh air. And I think people hadn't really seen that before. Because basically, the cool thing about it is almost like that show could be about a white dude. But instead of that, it's like it's an Indian guy and it's about his Asian friend, his black lesbian friends. Like those could be conversations that usually, and especially in the TV world, you often see there's a white protagonist. There's like, you know, maybe a minority person kind of in the background. But I think what they did was they kind of just sort of swapped it out. And they're like, we're going to have, you know, people of color be the people driving the story. And so you'll get a sense of what it's like for us to walk through the world and that, no, it's not the 60s anymore, but the world is not, we don't live in a post-racial America. And so therefore, you know, there are certain things that we bump into and we have to confront or deal with that, you know, certain our Caucasian brethren and sisters don't have to.
Well, that concept to me, that idea that when you walk into a room, you realize you've changed the temperature of the room just by walking into it. Is something that, again, it's also what you think as a writer, too, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think for me, I can't not come from that place. You know, it's like, well, even when I'm thinking about characters, and more often than not, the characters I'm writing are people of color. Sometimes they're queer people of color. But I think it's a thing that, you know, I'm always curious to dive into their stories, into their narrative, and to really let them drive the ship and to let them steer the story and to have people kind of see the world through their lens, which I think is really what great entertainment, you know, does, where you're watching a story that feels familiar and universal, but you're watching it, you know, through a perspective that is not your own. And if you can laugh or relate to it in some way, I think that's sort of how we move forward as a society and as a country.
But if people of color, we often learn to laugh anyway, just because if you sort of look at it just with one eye open, it's just too tragic anyway.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. I think that's my background. I come from a comedic, you know, I'm always finding the joy, finding the laughter, and even in the darkest of moments, because I think we as a people have done that for generations. But I think, and obviously like people like myself or Aziz, I think that's just sort of just what we do, that we kind of really sort of have fine-tuned it. But I think that's what life is. It's the good, it's the bad, it's the dramatic, it's the funny. I think it's about mixing it up, because that really is life when you think about it.
Because one of the things about Master of None, even the Thanksgiving episode, if you like stood 2 degrees to the left or to the right, it could be melodrama, it could be soap opera, couldn't it?
Yeah, and I think we didn't want to shy away from the gravity of it and the weight of what we were doing, because, you know, coming out is not fun. At the time, it's definitely not funny. But when I looked back on it, or even when I was sort of telling the story or talking to Alan and Aziz about it, now I can see the light in it. I can see the silliness in it. I can see, you know, how I sort of faltered, how my mother faltered, you know, in terms of that process of me coming out and her being come out too, and how that's just, there's just a natural air of comedy to it, because these are two people who come from two very different generations and who walk through the world very differently, and they're dealing with something that they can't ignore. And so I think that it just lends itself to humor.
I like that you say when you walk the door, because you're a really confident person, and when you walk through the door of that set, your physical confidence just drains out of you. Does it remind you of like what it's like to walk into your house?
A little bit. But I think the thing is, like, about my house, I mean, I get my confidence from my mother. You know, she's very confident. You know, she, you know, Angela Bassett is the right person to play her because that's, she's so, you know, and she is, she's like 6'1". She's like regal, stunning woman. I think that's because of her height. I think she can't help but walk with, you know, through the world with, you know, her chest out and her chin up. That's just who she is. I think that's who she was raised to be. And,
But when you're hiding part of yourself, though, you were kind of half-masked in the house. I thought it was really interesting that your posture changed.
Yeah.
in that episode.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that was something I had to tap into because, you know, I've been away from that part of my life for so long. So I think going back to that place of when I'm, you know, in the house and I'm with the family and I'm not as confident about my truth, per se. But even in that, though, I think the cool thing about the character is she's confident. She, in her own world, is very confident. She's like, look, this is who I am, and this is what it is. But when it comes to family, I think for all of us, that's where the insecurities sort of come out because they know where all the bodies are buried. They know the most, you know, deepest and darkest secrets you have. And so that's, and you want them to approve of you the most. You know, it's like, yeah, we care about the outside world, but the truth is you go home and for approval. That's what you want to say, yes, you've done well and we're proud. And so I think that's where a lot of that sort of shoulders shrinking, I think, comes from.
Because I just thought it was a really interesting physical performance. Mm-hmm. And I just, the little bit of time I spent around you, you're clearly a really physical person. Mm-hmm. who knows the kind of impression you make when you walk into a room. Mm-hmm. And so it's almost you grew up being mindful of that just because there's certain parts of your life you couldn't expose in the house, right?
Yeah, 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 absolutely. And I think for most queer people, before you're out or even when you're freshly out, there's still this level of shame, you know, of who you are, and because you know that the family doesn't understand, they don't quite approve yet. And you're also, when you're at the beginning of that journey with them, it's uneasy for both parties, I think, you know, because it's like, you know, I'm gay, you want to wear the rainbow flag, but you know that makes the family uncomfortable. So you're walking a line of how much do I express who I am, but also how respectful do I have to be, which I think plays into the thing of when you're a person of color, because I think that's really a thing for us in our houses, and it's wanting to respect your elders and not want to make people uncomfortable, because that's the weird thing. It's like, I don't care if I make people in the outside world uncomfortable, like, deal with it. But there is this weird thing of like not wanting to make my mother uncomfortable and not wanting to make my aunt or my grandmother. And I think that's a hurdle that you have to get over. And I had to do it myself. And I think in me doing that, I think made me even more confident, so to speak, in the outside world. Because the minute you stop caring what your family thinks of you and your life, I think is when you walk out into the world, you really don't care. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way. I just mean that there comes a point where you sort of stop living for your family. And I think there are some, you know, you kind of do it a lot through your 20s and it's sort of because you're wanting to get their approval. But the truth is, for some, you kind of go, well, you know what? Like, it doesn't matter what I do. I can't win for losing. Like, I keep. So I think there comes a point where you just kind of cross that threshold. And you're right, because in the scenes you're talking about, I hadn't yet. You know, what I was writing about, it was still that time where, yeah, I was out, but I wasn't, you know, I still felt like, oh, you guys don't approve of this. And so then, and eventually I get to a place of a little bit more comfort of bringing somebody home.
It's a treat for my Emmy-nominated guest who's graciously consented to do the show finally is Lena Waithe. She's one of the stars of Master of None.
I said yes before the nomination came.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, and Master of Her Own Shoe Game, by the way. We'll get to that a little bit later.
True.
But I guess what I find so interesting, too, is that what this show is about, and it's something we don't see very often in drama or comedy, is the conservatism in black homes, which I think can often surprise people, let's say, in the mainstream, who don't really see that.
Right. Yeah, and I think it's also a bit of a class thing, too. You know, we were middle class. I say we were working middle class. I never had everything I wanted, but I never wanted for anything. So I think that also, I think, speaks to it as well, because there's this element of wanting to assimilate, wanting particularly white people to be – happy with us or okay with us or say, my mom's maiden name is Hall. Aren't the Halls a good family? You know, they're so nice and they don't make a lot of trouble. I think that is a big part of, you know, not just my household, but I think I can kind of speak to, you know, a lot of households like that. And yes, it's sort of, and I think that gets trickled down to my generation where we do have a different way of looking at the world. You know, we wonder, well, why do I have to make those white folks over there comfortable? Like, or what is that? But I learned a lot, I think, about in writing this, about my mom's perspective and being reminded, you know, that she was born in 1953. You know, she was born into a segregated America. And my grandmother, who left, you know, Arkansas to come to Chicago, she's part of that great migration to start a new life. And but again, still she bought a house in a white neighborhood. And so I think all that stuff is sort of like built into why I think certain households, particularly black households, middle class households, operate in the way they do, because they may not be thinking of it in that way, but they really are still trying to make everybody feel comfortable in terms of their blackness, because their blackness just makes people uncomfortable. So they're like, okay, what can I do to make everything okay? What can I do to make you feel good in my presence? And I think for my generation, there was no, you know, I'm a generation of the Tupac and the Biggie. Like, we do not. We sort of thought, well, no, we want to make them uncomfortable in my presence. We want them to deal with whatever that is that they have on their own time. That is not my problem. And I think that's where I think some of the bit of the headbutting sort of starts, because I think for my mother, it's very hard for her to wrap her brain around, oh, so you don't care what society thinks of you?
It's funny because as you were talking about it, I realized that one of the things that's so interesting about this episode are the kind of visual cues you bring into the house. Mm-hmm. Dress the way you dress, even though it's clearly like a toned-down version of who you are, you walk to the house, mm-hmm. it's still you, so it's still sending some kind of signal that can't be ignored.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And because the truth is, that is the only way I feel comfortable. The only way it's and everybody's different. You know, some, you know, lesbian women are like, well, I can wear a dress and do some makeup and I'm cool with that. Like, for me, it's genuinely, it just does. It's really foreign. It'd be like a guy putting on a dress that doesn't wear a dress. That's how it would feel. It feels that uncomfortable. And so I think for me, and I always tried to play with it and have fun with it when she was a kid and her being a tomboy, all that kind of stuff. But when she gets older, it's like she's very clear about where she falls on the sort of spectrum.
And you can also see, and Angela does such a great job of registering her disapproval of the way she's dressed when she walks in the house for Thanksgiving. Again, as a person of color, these cues that are in this show that I think make it a really complex piece of material
See. Thank you. And I think Angela really tapped into, you know, what was on the page and then also like what she brought to it as well in conversations I had with her about interactions with my own mother. And she really picked up on things, and then there was just an understanding that she got without us having to like say, okay, so look this way or feel disapproving. She like stepped in and was like, trust, I get it. Cause I think there's a commonality. There's a knowing already. And she got it. Cause she even said she said her mother was very conservative. And again, that's of a different generation, but she said, she's like, oh yeah. She's like, my mom was very like, things have to be a certain way and look this way. So we really connected on that level. And so I think she brought some of that to it, but also in terms of the conversations I had with her about my mom and how certain things just made her feel uncomfortable. She was really good about a look, a gesture, without it being so over the top. Because that was a big thing for me. I was like, my mom was not like throwing Bibles at me or like, you know, kicking me out the house. But for the middle class black family, it is about the look. It is about the gesture. It is about the frustration. It is about the conversation that happens in the kitchen after the first time the girl comes home. Like, those are the things that I experienced, and I wanted for it to feel really palpable and really honest.
We have to take a break. It's a treat. My guest, who I think is a stud, is Lena Waithe. She's nominated for an Emmy for her writing and her great work on the episode Thanksgiving, A Master None on Netflix. We'll take a break. There's more to come.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes. Join Jacqueline Coley as she hosts a brand new podcast, Scene on Screen. Meet the innovative people at NBC Universal as they share their journeys, inspirations, and the movies that define them. Each episode is an intimate and fun conversation about the impact of film. Scene on Screen is available now wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
I'm studying it up with Lena Waithe. She's one of the stars of Master of None, nominated for an Emmy for a terrific work on the Thanksgiving episode. One of the things I want to ask you about, too, because we've talked about good times and a different world, and there's a kind of a thing that sets up an interesting tension, the idea of being a person of color who gets to do what you want for a career.
Oh, yeah.
As compared to, if you were considered successful people of your mom's generation, you just went and got a job.
Uh-huh.
The idea of doing what you wanted to do was a completely foreign concept.
Absolutely.
And there's even the tension of that in this episode, isn't there?
Oh, yeah. And in my own life, I mean, it's interesting because my mom, she's at one point told me about how she wanted to open up a salon, as you know, but she never really talked to me about her dreams, so to speak. And I don't know if that was by design. I don't know if that was just because that's not something her generation really does. And maybe she had to make sacrifices because she was a single mother of two. So there's that. But, you know, and same thing with my grandmother. Like, it is very foreign. And so I think I'm sort of foreign to them, you know, in that way because, and also too, I mean, I do not come from an industry family at all. So me saying, oh, you want to go to Los Angeles and like be a television writer, I think they don't, they're like, what does that even mean? What does that look like? What, you know, it's like, so, but I was lucky though that they were like, we don't understand this, but we're going to support it because you're not on drugs and you're not pregnant. That was always a thing, you know, I was like, okay, the standards are low. You know, it's just, I discovered my passion very early as a kid, really like devouring hours and hours and hours of television and all kinds of television, you know. And like, I remember watching Hunter with my grandmother, and like, you know, she would watch these old shows. Obviously, they weren't old. I mean, they were like sort of, she was sort of reliving. She watched those reruns of like Perry Mason and all that kind of stuff. And I'll watch that with her. And then we'd watch like Golden Girls. And then as I got older, watching Grey's Anatomy and Will and Grace, like I just really was so fascinated by voices like David E. Kelly, Sorkin, Shonda, like, and also hearing how Shonda was influenced by Sorkin and the way she does the walk and talks and versus the White House is the hospital and all those things and picking and choosing from who I wanted to be influenced by but David E. Kelly also was a really big influence as well. So
in what way for you with David E. Kelly?
Well, I think watching The Practice, yes, things were taking place in the courtroom, so the stakes were there, but you were always so concerned about Bobby and his moral compass and.
And the idea of trying to do the right thing versus the thing that keeps the business going, because
exactly.
It was a failing law practice.
Exactly. And I think that to me was always so fascinating. And there's this like tiny moment that I obviously didn't forget. I remember, but like him, you know, he was trying a case and he begged his client to take a plea because he thought he was going to lose. And he's like, if I lose, you're going to go to jail forever and I'm going to feel guilty about it. So then, of course, they come out and they do the thing. And he goes to the judge and asks, like, can I see what the verdict would have been? And it was not guilty. And so he went to jail for a few years. And so just even what that means, like he was afraid. He didn't bet on himself. That's the thing. It's like the case, they matter, but not really. It was so about these lawyers and how they interacted with each other. And I really care about characters, and they were so beautifully fleshed out. So for me, I that was my dream. You know, I really was like, I want to follow this dream and I want to do it. And I was very lucky, even though, like I said, my family like really didn't understand. They still don't to a certain point, but they were always very supportive. They're like, okay, cool. That's what you want to do? Like, all right, cool. We'll send you money. You know, we'll try to come out there and visit and do what we can. And they did. And for that, I'm really, really grateful. Like, I definitely know, I think a lot of them look at me and go, wow. Cause even my sister, like she works in the restaurant industry, and I think they kind of look at me and go, wow, well, we're living, you know, through you. And it's really cool that you get to live your dream, and we'll keep working these 9-to-5s.
But that's a fascinating thing to me, because it's a thing I sort of deal with a little bit, too.
Uh-huh.
A little bit. Okay. Well, the idea of just trying to explain, because there's this sort of disconnect, because if you're not a person who's in it, you don't really understand it. It doesn't, and it's hard to explain in ways that makes it doesn't really hew to any sort of logical effort versus reward kind of payoff.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, because when you're first starting out, it's very confusing because, I was obviously working like odd jobs to make, ends meet while trying to get into an industry gig. But I think that's super confusing to them because they're like, well, you're out there, you're working hard, you want it, and you don't have it yet. And it's like, yeah, that's what this is. And that's why when I mentor people, that's a big thing I try to tell them. I'm like, you have to study your craft, but you also have to study patience as well, because that's really half of what it is. It's like all the time you're waiting to be discovered, waiting for somebody to notice you and give you an opportunity. You have to be preparing for that opportunity when it comes. And so I was on the phone this morning with a couple, people that, had some questions and like I try to mentor them. And that's the thing I said, you must be patient and you must be married to the craft. The playing field isn't completely leveled in this industry, but, I do think of it, I think of myself as an athlete. I think of it as a sport, and that basketball court is even. That football field is even. It's like if you put me on the court, like I'm gonna take the shot, and there's a strong chance I'm gonna make it.
My guest, who's always practicing her 3-pointer, apparently, is Lena Waithe. She's one of the stars of Master of None, for which she's gotten Emmy nomination this year. Is The Treatment, and I guess one of the things I know I got a little bit off topic a bit, mm-hmm. but one of the things I mentioned to you when we did the LACMA panel, which I was completely impressed by, and you alluded to it in the first half, that moment in the kitchen mm-hmm. when you're just playing the silence and you're just watching. First of all, that really made me take your measure as an actress because mm-hmm. you were there and present in that scene. But I just thought that was what everything was all about, was that when there's so much not spoken in mm-hmm. that kitchen.
Yeah.
And you were saying people hadn't mentioned that to you before. They're just talking about the show itself rather than that.
Right. Yeah. And I think, and like I was telling you, one, I was very grateful to you for noticing it because I think it's one of those things that could wind up on the cutting room floor because you go, does it move story forward? Or
you said potentially it almost did it.
I think, almost, because usually they're looking for, they want to make sure all the scenes pop and that they're really moving the story forward. And I understand that. But I wrote it in there because, one, it's based on a real, moment. But also I wanted to show where they were. She comes out and you have that moment. But what that moment represents is the time right after you've come out, is that uncomfortability. It's the, okay, you're out now and now you're sort of like, now I have to deal with it. And that doesn't make the parent very comfortable. And also, but the kid is uncomfortable, too. Like, I was still, trying to find my way. But there was this level of the disapproval sort of reared its ugly head again because she was being confronted with it, like, literally in her face at her own dining room table. And also, it goes back to that thing we talked about and being respectful, or this idea of being respectful in your parents' house.
And it's an idea that doesn't make sense to you, so you have to be respectful of it.
Right. And so because it's frustrating because if that was a guy sitting there, the respectful conversation might not be coming up in the kitchen. And that's where I think the silence sort of comes in, because there is a frustration, but there's also a level of respect that one has to have. And so that interaction was very similar to the interaction I've actually had with my own mother, of being frustrated by what's being said, but feeling as though I'm still the child and I can't really I can't really argue or debate what's being said to me, and I know it's not fair. And so the silences and the physicality of it, I think, to me, is something that I really wanted to play because I don't think people have seen that before. And I think it's a very important part of my journey and a part of, I think, for a lot of queer people, their process with their family, of that awkward moment, with your parent after they've just sort of met the person you're dating, because they aren't completely comfortable with it. But you have to go through that in order for them to get a little bit more comfortable.
I think it's one of those things that people respond to and don't know they're responding to it because it's a moment that doesn't define itself for anybody.
Right.
And had you written stuff like that before? That, because we talked about Hello Cupid, which is really almost, you can't breathe, there's so much dialogue and that going on all the time. Mm-hmm. And this was just a moment just really taking a breath, but that breath not relieving any of the tension.
Right.
And it felt almost like a moment in a play or a movie rather than a TV show. It was a really big beat. And I think one of the reasons that people tend to not talk about it is they don't know how to process it to make sense of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, Melina Masukas, who's the phenomenal director of that episode, we play with blocking a little bit, and try not to rehearse it too much. But Angela and I definitely want to be aware of where the other person was. And Melina gave us some some activity and some busyness to play with. But I think that was a really, it was very rewarding and such a fun experience to play in that small space. Because that's the thing, it was a very small set.
And it's two big people.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Personality-wise, in a small space.
You know, find their room. And we play with it a lot because Angela, well, one, she's such a phenomenal actress, but what she likes to do in rehearsal is like go really big and find crazy things and then reel it back and reel it in and kind of see what things can stay big and what things she wants to make smaller. And that was really cool to watch and to experience, you know, in the rehearsal of it. And I, you know, would sort of sometimes alter my reactions to her. That's sort of what I'm doing. I am reacting to her and she's having a moment in that kitchen.
I just really wanted to have you here really to talk about this because I just mm-hmm. thought it was such an epical moment in television. And also touches on this thing that weirdly has turned up in Black TV before, be it Good Times or even The Cosby Show, mm-hmm. which I guess we can't talk about anymore. That idea of when you're in a Black house, there's ownership of this house. This is my house.
Oh, yeah.
I brought you in this world, I can take mm-hmm. you out. Or mm-hmm. James saying to his son, this is my apartment. You yeah. live here. I'm paying rent, but this is my place. That mm-hmm. idea that in this place, you act a certain way.
Right.
Which is something to play it for so many different things rather than just for straight comedy.
Right.
I thought was really unusual, too. But I could see the influence of all these other shows it had on you in that moment in that house.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I'm so influenced by, I mean, all these, like, Black family TV shows, whether it be Family Matters, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, Good Times. You know.
And all those shows, at some point, somebody says, this is my house.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
In a way they don't do in white shows.
Oh, yeah. Because I think there is, you know, I mean, not to get too deep, but for us, ownership is important of the land in which we live and we walk on. So I think, you know, in the house I grew up in, which was my grandmother's house, which they let us play a little bit in the episode, is that, you know, obviously the mom was with her mother. You know, for that generation to own a home, like that is, it's really there. It's where they place their stamp on the world. And so that's where I think a lot of that comes into play. And also, too, is, you know, the sort of matriarchal sort of, you know, environment that you're in and to when you have a house full of women. But I think, you know, Angela did such a wonderful job of owning that. Like, she just sort of, like, took it on because she walked through the set and the sets were really done beautifully and production design was great. They looked at pictures of my old house that I grew up in. And so Angela really walked around those sets and felt like she did own it. You know, she was great in terms of the way there was a comfortability in the way she walked through the kitchen and, you know, placed the food on the table. That, I think, also played into the scene as well. And also, in the way she handled me very much like my mother does or referred to me. So I think it really speaks to her talent as an actress. And because I would see her walk around the set and feel that sense of, like, becoming that familiarity with it and the just walking around. Because she even says, oh, yeah, this reminded me of my house, you know, like when I was growing up. So she definitely did that work just sort of on her own and walk. And we all loved the sets. And it felt like a house. It was really beautifully done. But that she really played for sure throughout the scenes. But I think particularly that one when you're in a kitchen, which is also a very sacred place for Black families, especially when you're cleaning it. I mean, like, I remember as a kid at seven, my grandmother taught me how to clean a mean kitchen. You know, there's just, I don't know, it just sort of like fuels through to all the generations. But yeah, I think that's why there was something so almost spiritual about it. That scene of like us, like, you know, I'm drawing, she's washing, like, just, and we even worked that out. I was like, am I drawing? Is she washing? What's happening? You know, just because that, you know, when you're doing activity, you want to be clear on what you're doing. But yeah, we just seemed to find, we found it. And Angela really, I needed her to really own it. I needed her to own that space. I needed her to own that character so that way I could, you know, do what I needed to do. And Angela was the perfect, I mean, scene partner.
I can't believe we're out of time. This has gone so fast. Please, you have to come back, please.
I will. I will. I hope to have a lot more projects. I'll just keep coming back and talking about them.
You can talk to me about anything you want. Just come back to talk about tennis shoes the next time. My
yes.
guest who owns it is Lena Waithe. She's one of the stars of Master of None. Congratulations on your Emmy nomination
you.
For the writing of Thanksgiving. We are out of time, sadly. Our recording engineer who also mixes the show is Kat Yor. It's edited by Blake Bite, who's the associate producer. I have no shoe game. It's the treatment.
Not true.
Catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.